Greet you all in Christ's name this morning. I want to welcome our visitors too. Some of y'all can't hide where you come from. Marvin's brother looks a lot like him, so the others, I'm not sure of your names or where you might come from, but welcome. And sorry to y'all who thought you were going to get Joe this morning and you ended up with me, but maybe you can learn something anyway. This message is one that has probably been preached here before. Actually, I'm sure it has. I've heard this teaching before. It's nothing new, but it's been rattling around the back of my head, so I guess today is the time for me to share on it. I titled the message, A Mysterious Christian. You can think about that for a little bit while we turn to James chapter 5. The old saying of preachers tend to preach their own weaknesses is very true this morning, because this is not this isn't something that really comes easy for me. It's something I have to force myself to practice. James 5, we'll read 13 through 20. James 5, 13 through 20. Is there any among you afflicted? Let him pray. Is there any merry? Let him sing psalms. Is there any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of the faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up. And if he have committed sins, they shall be forgiven him. Confess your faults one to another, pray for one another that you may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Elias was a man subject to like passions as we are, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. Brethren, if any do err from the truth and one convert him, let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. So if I have a theme verse today, it would be verse 16. Confess your faults one to another, pray one for another that ye may be healed. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. What's that got to do with a mysterious Christian, right? So y'all probably know me good enough by now that you know I like a good story, and I do have a story here this morning. Do you like a good mystery story? There's something about mysteries that are they're exciting because you try to solve them. You have a riddle in your mind you want to solve. But this is a mystery, an old mystery, that we're not going to solve here this morning. It's been tried to be solved, but anyway. I want to talk about a ship, a mysterious ship. And I don't know if y'all can see this picture or not. You probably can't. I hastily printed it off this morning before I came to church. It's an old grainy image of a ship. I don't know if you children can see that or not, but it's a boat. And the name of it is Mary Celeste. I think I'm saying that right. I think it's Spanish for the word heavenly. And it was a very ordinary ship back in its day. There was nothing odd about it when it was created. But it was a ship that was... And it seemed to be destined for failure from the very start. Some of y'all probably have read the book or read the story about it or have heard about it or whatever. So I don't want to bore you, but I'm going to tell you about it this morning anyway. It was 102 foot long and it had sails. It was back in the 1800s, so it was before motors. And the very first captain on this ship died before he ever completed its maiden voyage. So... sailors are superstitious people, And this was one of the things that helped turn this ship into something to be avoided in the sailing world. In London, it accidentally rammed another ship and sank it very soon after it started, soon after it was built. And later, it wrecked in Canada after a storm, and it laid on the seashore there for a while until some company decided to salvage it and put it back to work. So I guess there was wrecks being rebuilt and used back before Marcus Martin started rebuilding wrecked vehicles. They decided to salvage it, and they rescued it, and they put a lot of money, actually more than it was worth, back into this boat, trying to get a little more life out of it. And eventually, it fell into a company, and they fell to a company, and an experienced sea captain named Benjamin Briggs took it. And they had a lot of trouble finding crews just to help Benjamin run this ship across the ocean. But they finally got a crew together for it. And the crew rather reluctantly left in the fall of 1872 to take a load across the ocean. Benjamin was a family man, and he took his 2-year-old daughter and his wife along with him. He had another son that he left behind for school reasons, and they all got on this boat and they left November 5th, headed to Italy, with a load with barrels of alcohol on it, like cleaning type of alcohol. And they sailed off, and they completely disappeared. The crew was never seen again. Now, what was odd about this, boats disappeared all the time, but the boat was found, but it had no crew. On December the 4th, another ship spotted it out in the middle of the ocean, all by itself, just the boat. And they were looking through their glasses, and something seemed odd with this thing. There was no crew, there was no movement, the sails were half-staff, and kind of flopping around. It obviously had nobody in control. And it struck the captain of this other ship, his name was David Morehouse, it struck him really odd. Why would this ship be out there all by itself? So he ordered some of his crew to get in their little paddle boat and paddle over and check it out, and they did. And what they found really creeped them out. It was a perfectly good ship, nobody on it. Just floating. Nothing but silence except for a few creaky boards, and they reported that it felt like a ghost was steering the ship because the wheel was just turning by itself as the water flopped the rudder back and forth. That'd be kind of creepy to be the person on that boat. But now it left the crews of these two ships with a decision to make. They had to decide what to do. You just let it go? They were already kind of shorthanded. But they got together and they decided they're going to try to save this ship. Finders keepers, after all, and if you found, I guess the rule of the sea in those times was if you found something like this, it was yours if you recovered it. So they split the crew in half, and through great danger to both vessels, they actually got them back to land. And it's a long story, but the crew that rescued the boat almost went to jail because nobody on land believed that the boat was empty. Why would anybody abandon a boat, a perfectly good boat, in the middle of the ocean? So they thought that they climbed on and killed everybody on board and stole the ship. And they almost went to jail, but in the end, they did stay out of jail, but I don't think they even got to keep any of the salvage of the boat. Basically, all their work was in vain. But what a mystery. And this was in 1872, back in newspaper days. And the newspapers ran story after story of theories of what happened on this boat. Everybody wanted to know what happened. And the rumors flew like you wouldn't believe. There was people that said that they'd maybe all gone swimming, and the boat drifted away and they got ate by sharks. There was To add to the mystery, there was two men that on their deathbeds claimed to have been on that boat, and they confessed their story, and then they died. The only problem was their stories were radically different. In the end, they were all discredited as false information. The one man claimed that the captain got in an argument with the crew as to whether you could swim with your clothes on or not, and he jumped in to prove that you could, and he got attacked by a shark, and two other sailors jumped in to help him. And in the meantime, everybody else on the boat got on a crow's nest, I guess something that sticks out over the front of the boat, to watch what was happening down there. And the crow's nest fell over into the water, and everybody died except him, and he drifted to shore, and only him is alone to tell the story. All kinds of far-fetched ideas. It seems silly, don't it? But that it was rumors that were flying. Another man claimed to have found a skeleton on a island clutching a glass bottle with a note in it saying what happened. All these things. It's all these mysteries and theories and ideas, and so many of them seem hopelessly wrong, fake, and who knows who's right. So thinking about mysteries, sometimes I hear people talking about other people, and they describe the other person as a mystery. He's just a mystery. Nobody knows what's going on with him. And thinking of that, I had to think, should a Christian ever be a mystery? Do I have a right to be completely silent and quiet about my life when I'm a part of a church? Do I have a right to do that? And I just want to say, some mysteries aren't wrong. They're not bad in themselves. It's not bad for me to buy a birthday present for my boys or my wife and hold it a secret and it's a mystery. I'm not talking about that kind of a thing. I'm talking about being mysterious person to our fellow brethren about our walk with Christ, our walk with how are you doing, that type of a thing. If you or I am a mysterious person to our fellow brethren, because we're hiding something in our lives because they know we wouldn't approve of it, or because it goes against what the church stands for, we are setting ourselves up for spiritual failure and for rumors flying about us that may or may not be true. And one thing I've discovered about human nature is that if they're going to spread rumors, they usually err on the side of bad instead of on the side of good. Right or wrong, and we can say, well, shouldn't anybody be spreading rumors about anything? Well, that's not really how human nature works at the end of the day. So if I'm going to be very quiet about my personal life or my family life or whatever life, and people start imagining things, it's just as much my fault if the things that they're imagining are less than I want to be known for, because nobody knows. I'm being quiet about it. And I've met some people already who, and I'm not thinking about anybody here, but I've already met people on the job or wherever that have, they should have been a little bit more of a mystery. They walk up to you and they just give you way too much information. It's stuff that you really don't even want to know. It's like, please stop. And sometimes in an effort to offset those people like me clam up and we don't say anything ever. And that's not right either. And I'm speaking to everybody here this morning, but it seems like us men especially, and I'm talking to myself, we tend to clam up and be a little quiet quicker than the women, it seems. We men sometimes don't mind at all going through life communicating with grunts and hand signals, do we? We it's not hard for us to live life like that. And I almost get the feeling, at least in my own life, that if I, being manly, it's quiet to be manly and never share my struggles and act like I'm perfect. And that's wrong. I'm here to tell you that's not where I'm setting myself up for failure, and it's not it doesn't make me look more manly to be quiet about my failures, is what I'm trying to say. In fact, it makes you weaker. Think about it like this. As a young child, like the age my boys are and younger, I remember looking up to my dad. And at that stage in life, dads are almost perfect. I mean, they do everything right. And as you get older, you realize dad's not perfect. But if I'm a dad that looks perfect to my child now, that's fine. But as I get older, if I continue to act perfect and act like I never make mistakes, is that child ever going to want to come to me and admit his failures? You follow what I'm saying? If or even a church leader or a I think leadership especially needs to be open with their failures and their struggles. Because who wants, if you're on a board or you're a parent or you're a church leader or whoever, and you always are coming across as a perfect person that never makes mistakes, who wants to go to that person and admit that they were wrong? You don't want to, because you feel like it's something they've never struggled with. But if I, as a parent, open up to my children, and I have to apologize sometimes. And I'm just here to tell you, men, don't, if you feel the need to go apologize to your children, do it. It's not fun. I've had to do it. I don't enjoy it at all. But I think it does build something with a child that someday down the road when they need to come to you to make things right, maybe it's a little easier for them. I read this, I don't like to just read from stuff that's not the Bible up here, but in this study I came across three paragraphs that I want to read to you. And this was not wrote by a conservative Anabaptist person or even an Anabaptist person that I'm aware of. But it summed up what I was thinking fairly well, so I'm just going to read three paragraphs here. Just bear with me and listen. Some of these words are big, but I'll try to get through them. They were talking. I pulled them out of the middle of nowhere, so it might not make sense in the article that I read. But this concept of conferral grates against our culture's value of autonomous individualism. He's talking about people not wanting to open up and share with others. Western culture stresses the right of individual privacy at the expense of individuals' responsibility to community. People rarely share their problems with one another. When people venture to open up about their struggles, it's almost exclusively in a client-counselor setting where confidentiality is strictly enforced. The Western Church has largely adopted our culture's view of confidentiality. The Christian Church has unintentionally taught most of its members to live on an island in the name of avoiding gossip and upholding confidentiality. Not only do churches implicitly discourage people to be open with each other, they encourage those with whom they have shared their problems to maintain strict confidentiality. This insistence upon strict confidentiality has resulted in both a lack of community and a host of church cover-ups. We have seen horrible reproach come to the Western Church due to cover-ups and lack of transparency. News headlines regularly expose church leaders for telling members to keep silent when members should have conferred with an objected third party. The result is that something every bit as ugly as church riddled by gossip. No true community, no church discipline, and people were wrestling with their sin problems all alone. I'm not saying everything in that article is 100% true, but I think this author nailed it when he wrote this. We people are not, I don't think we're capable of handling being a mysterious person all to ourselves. We need the support of the church and the community around us to help us. We do. And there's people sometimes that you hear them say, ah, well, we'll just confess it to God. After all, God's the one that I sinned against. God's the one that is going to hold me accountable. And you know what? That's true. That is true. But if all I ever do is confess my sins to God, and I never tell y'all my struggles, I don't have y'all to be accountable to. We forget about James 5:16, confess your faults one to another. I was talking with a friend of mine here a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't anybody from here, but he was talking about people with past addictions. And he made the comment that he said, I don't know anything about counseling, but he said, I have learned that people with past addictions, and he was talking specifically about pornography in this case. He said, if somebody struggled with that, they've overcome it, they're not proud of it. They're never proud of it. It's part of their past and part of their testimony. But somebody that's truly past it and living a victorious life isn't ashamed to talk about it. They're not holding it up as they're on top of their head. They're not holding it up as their main thing going through life, moving on, that this is what they overcame. But it's part of their past, and they're willing to talk about it. I had to think about Vernon Yoder when he gave his testimony up here when Shepherd's Fold was here about his some of his alcohol stuff. He wasn't proud of that, but he was willing to talk about it and share about it. And that's part of the thing of moving on in a Christian life. When you've done wrong, and we all have, and we've moved past it, and that's being willing to talk about it later down the road, even though it's not pretty. And I know there's people out there that take their testimony and they make it almost their whole thing. It's what they're known for, and when people think of this person, they think of this certain thing he overcame. I don't think that should be the Christian walk. The Christian walk is your journey with Christ. Now, if that was part of our past, be willing to talk about it. I think it's a sign that you've overcome and you're moving on. Romans 12:17 says, recompense no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. That last part's what I wanted. Provide things honest. Being honest with others and willing to share when others ask us. Are we honest? Are we honest? I know it's the kind of the cultural thing, and there's no shame in it, but you walk up to somebody and you say, how are you? And everybody says, good or fine. And it's kind of a conversation opener. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not against that. But how is it when somebody walks up to you and they truly ask, how are you? And they want to know how you're doing. Am I willing to be 100% honest with where I'm at? And we humans are pretty quick to figure out and smell out if somebody's being nosy and if they just curious and they're trying to get information. We know pretty quick. But the ones that come and they actually want to know, how are you doing? We know you had this struggle. And how is it now? Am I willing to be honest? Are you willing to be honest? We have a duty to check in with each other like that. And I'll just say this too. There's some things that a husband and a wife, a spouse, can work together on. But a lot of these things, we need others also. I need more than just my wife to keep me accountable on some things. What about our money? Some people are too embarrassed to talk about their money because they either feel like they don't have enough or because they feel like they have too much. Maybe they're embarrassed because of how much they have. And I'm not saying, and I've said this before up here, I'm not saying we come to church every Sunday morning and get together and share our bank statements. And that's not what I'm saying. But if I am completely closed about my finances, and nobody knows anything. I'm setting myself up for failure either one way or the other. If I'm always secretive about how much something costs, can never say, I'm setting myself up for failure. There ought to be somebody other than your wife or whoever that you can talk to about. What about pure, and I mentioned this too, purity for us men. When somebody is extremely reluctant to have any kind of accountability or filtering system on their phone, I get pretty suspicious. And if I refuse to do it, y'all have a right to be very suspicious of me. Why is it that I don't want accountability? You have a right to ask. Are we comfortable with somebody else or your wife or somebody looking through your phone, men? Is it okay? If I get very defensive of it and nobody else is ever allowed to look through my phone, I have some questions. And you have the right to question me. What about your relationships, your home life, your Christian walk? Do we ever talk? Are we ever willing to open up and talk about it if somebody asks? I've read enough history books that I know that one of the traits of a dictator is secrecy. Y'all know that's not new information to y'all, but dictators love to be secretive about their own personal lives. Everybody else around them, they love to know every intrinsic detail, but about themselves, you can never find out anything about them, it seems. Controlling people love to be mysterious about their own lives. I'll give you, I actually have some nieces sitting here this morning, so I'll give you some uncle-ly advice. I don't usually have nieces here. But if any of you young ladies ever start dating a young man, and here's what made me come to say this. Well, I wasn't even here. It was somewhere else. I don't even know who it was. But there was a young lady, I overheard her say, he's just something about somebody being so mysterious. Well, what is it that's attractive about a mysterious guy? I don't know. But if you ever are dating a man and it comes to the point where he wants to, he proposes marriage to you or something, and he is still a mysterious man, don't marry him. Run away from him. Tell him to pound sand or whatever else girls tell guys when it's time to break up. You don't want to marry a mysterious man. I promise you, you don't. If he insists on being a mystery and he won't talk to you about his money, he won't talk to you about his church leaders and his relationship at his home church, he won't talk about his parents, if he's not willing to talk about any of these things and he's a mystery, run away from him. You're setting yourself up for a long, miserable life unless the Lord reaches down and he allows the Lord to change him. Don't marry somebody that's quiet and mysterious. They won't ever open up. Back to this boat, the merry boat. What they actually think happened, and I actually think is probably the most logical conclusion. The ship's records said that the boat, a few nights before, got in a violent storm. And one of the lids popped off of one of these alcohol barrels, or a couple of them. And then and it was putting out all these fumes. And then the storm disappeared. And I understand that sometimes out in the ocean, there's moments of dead calm, no wind whatsoever. It's pretty rare, but it happens. And they think that's what happened. And all these fumes were intoxicating, and they had to get off the boat. And they left in a mad scramble, and they left part of their masts up, and they pulled away from the boat to get away from these fumes. And about that time, a breeze came along, and away went their ship, and they left them in the boat, and they never could paddle quick enough to catch it. Whether that's what happened or not, nobody knows. Nobody knows. But in my mind, that's about the most logical things that make sense. Later, it was actually wrecked intentionally for insurance purposes because it was so... Nobody wanted anything to do with this boat. The owners just wanted their money out of it, and insurance fraud, I guess, paid for it. But the whole story is still, you can still find conspiracy theory stories on that ship today. It's still a mystery. I tell you all that, though, to tell you that openness creates accountability, and accountability helps create stronger Christians. We Christians here this morning, we don't need to be mysterious folk to our fellow brethren. We don't. And I know that there's nosy people out there that will gossip and they'll say the things that they shouldn't. And I know there's something that's simply not anybody's business and it doesn't do them any good to know it. I know there's those things. But in things that matter, in things that we know we're struggling in, be open with your struggles. I need to be open with my struggles. I have them. And my plea for you and for all of us is to be open on these things. There's no sense in living a quiet, secretive, miserable life by ourselves. Sometimes I look at everybody else's life and it looks like they have the perfect lives. Why would I want to mess them up with my problems? But we all struggle. We all struggle. It might be in different areas and in different things, but we all struggle. Nobody was intended to live life as on an island. Even if we aren't known to be the most talkative type of a person, my plea is to at least, if somebody asks, be willing to be open. Try to be willing to be open with your life. I need to try to be willing to be open with my life. And Lord, give us wisdom and to know when to speak and to remain silent. Because I know there's times to remain silent. Don't hear me say that there's not times to remain silent. But sometimes I think I err on the side of being silent quicker than when I need to be sharing my struggles. God bless all of you. I appreciate the openness I see here. I know things aren't fun to admit when we struggle, but my prayer, my hope for you is a victorious Christian life. And part of that is helped along by just being willing to be open with each other. Let's kneel for prayer.